the studios of Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, in Santa Cruz, California, I'm Gary Shapiro, and this is From the Bookshelf. My guest is Kim Fu. Her debut novel has been getting a lot of deserved attention, and if you've not read it or heard of it, then you should get it right away and thank me later. The novel is called For Today I Am a Boy. Kim Fu, welcome to From the Bookshelf.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Well, congratulations on For Today I Am a Boy. Tell us what you want our listeners to know about the book before we talk about it. I don't want to be the spoiler guy.
Sure. So, For Today I Am a Boy is the story of four sisters in an immigrant Chinese family, but it's primarily the story of Peter, who's born as the only son. So, in this family, the father very aggressively wants to erase everything about their family that is Chinese. It's very important to him that they are as white as possible, which is something of an insane and slightly abusive project. And it's also extremely important to him to have a son. And to him, that is the path to immortality. That is the meaning of life. That is lineage. That is everything. And of course, when he thinks he has a son, that son is exalted and that son is burdened with a great deal of expectation. But the son, Peter, knows in his heart that he's actually another daughter.
Why did you choose to write about gender issues? Do you see gender issues as a metaphor? Or not, or you wanted to write about them specifically?
Gender issues and gender performance has always interested me because I think it's something that I struggle with personally a little bit. But I think what really started the process, led me to thinking about this story, was actually the story of Christine Daniels, who was a sports writer for the LA Times. And her life was very particular and unique and ultimately tragic. But the one detail of her story that really stuck to me was that she was 49 when she transitioned. And, you know, she had to transition very publicly because she was such a well-known writer. I thought, you know, what are the forces in a life that make you engage in that much repression and conflict and unhappiness for almost 50 years? And that was a question that I wanted to answer as a writer.
Well, now you've opened the door by mentioning that you have your own gender identity issues. What, can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, I think, I suppose this maybe is not an uncommon experience for girls and young women, in that in looking around at other women and at grown women and being very, very puzzled by the performance of femininity and how it seems like such a complete package and how it's done so many different ways, but it felt very inscrutable to me and perhaps impossible to me. Like, I didn't understand how it could be done and then how I could fit into that rubric. And at the time that I was thinking about this novel, my own gender identity felt very much sort of complicated and up in the air for me at that point.
So, in other words, when you were like a little girl, you would think of, I could never wear high heels. I'm never going to be able to put on all this makeup, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, there's all these smaller things, like just how one walks or speaks or carries oneself. Mm-hmm. And it does seem... It does seem like a. I think it seems like something people almost know how to do instinctively, which was never the case for me, you know, or that they find their place instinctively at the very least, like they find what from, you know, all of these like minor alterations and performances, what works for them and what fits, and for me that was a struggle. Nothing seemed like it fit for a while.
Yeah. Well, I suppose I've had those same kinds of thoughts myself. When I was a kid, I was wondering, would I ever feel like a man, you know, because I pretty much felt like a boy then.
Mm-hmm.
And I still do. I don't think I ever got to that point where I suddenly realized, all right, now I can go chop some wood or something.
I think it's also the burden of expectation, right? I mean, that there are all these... that other people impose their ideas about gender on you based on how you perform it. And that's like an important part of how you move through the world and how people react to you. So it's not only, you know, it's not only like a decision you get to make all alone within yourself, it's how people are going to respond to you and treat you for the rest of your life, right?
Right. But, I guess that's very, very different than wanting to be really seeing yourself as the opposite gender imprisoned inside you.
Yeah, of course. I mean, Peter's experience is very particular, and Peter is actually a very feminine woman burdened by very extreme masculine expectations. So, you know, Peter's story is very particular.
And some of the things that he says, and he's the narrator of your story, he talks a lot kind of cynically about family and sex and marriage. And I was wondering, are those just his cynical thoughts or yours as well?
I've never thought of Peter as being cynical. I think actually Peter is sort of wants a very conventional life, actually. Like, I think Peter's ideal life is as a wife and mother. And I think maybe what comes across cynicism is the intensity of that unavailability to him. And I think that, the dysfunctional family that he comes from and that ecosystem of, you know, what that says about family is in conflict with the kind of very, you know, very conventional nuclear family that he wants. That his family is such a mess. But I think that, he has a very particular fondness for a particular idealized family.
Yeah. We're talking with Kim Fu, and she's just published her first novel, and it's called For Today, I'm a Boy. That's one way. You could read it many different ways. I also noticed your book has several different covers, depending on where the book was released, because the book has three different covers. Here in America, it's got this cover that's mostly black with pink writing. And then there's two other versions that I saw on your website that have pictures on them. Did you have anything to do with that? Or how did you? Or is that just they do that?
They do that. They show it to you, you know, in the end stage to see if you're okay with it. I think it's in Canada and Australia that have the other two covers.
Yeah.
And I think that in the U.S. market, because there's just so many more books, it's more important for your cover to stand out and, you know, to not look like other book covers, which I think is why the American one is so different, whereas the other two are more, you know, literal images of what the book is about. The American cover is more just, you know, it's like a visual pop is more what they're going for.
Well, Kim Fu, I would say that your book is really unusual and different, and it's not, I don't know what people expect when they pick up a novel anyway, but I mean, it's a different kind of book, and it's written in a really interesting way, and it has time. It's a fabulous book. I love it. But so how does it feel when they're trying to kind of, do you find it difficult if they're trying to say, well, this is a coming of age novel, or this is this novel or that novel?
Yeah, a little bit, I guess. For me at this point, it makes sense to let people label it whatever they want and whatever part of the book resonates the most for them. You know, for some people it is, you know, it is a book about, you know, the immigrant experience, very like, and that's what it is. And for some people it's a coming of age story. For some people it's very specifically a trans narrative. And for some people it's, you know, a very Canadian book. And for some people, you know, they would never say that at all. It has anything to do with national identity of any kind. And I think getting such a mixed response and having it wear all these labels, it feels like a good thing to me. Like, it feels like that I know that some people responded to all these different facets of it.
And it must be very gratifying to see all the great reviews you're getting, including in the New York Times. I don't know how authors feel about where they get reviewed, but I would imagine if they reviewed it in the New York Times, that'd be like, hey.
Yeah, I got up early and went to the newsstand and took a picture of myself at the newsstand holding it up. It was a great day.
So it must feel good.
Yeah, I've been very lucky.
Yeah. So now what about, now I don't know if you care about it or not, but have you looked at Amazon and seen what your readers think? I mean, that's kind of an interesting part of our modern age that you can know exactly what your readers think?
I've heard the advice many times not to look, but I haven't been able to resist. There aren't that many consumer reviews up right now. It is very interesting to have such direct access to your readers in that way. And I think, I don't think it's very healthy to think about their response when you're, say, trying to write a next book
me 2 stars. I'm going to remember what he said. So when my next book, he's going to give me 3 stars.
I was just at the Association of Writing Programs conference here in Seattle, and a lot of the panel talks boiled down to that advice. You know, they were about some specific aspect of engaging with the reader, but they all kind of came down to don't think about it while you're writing.
Right. Yeah. Well, I guess that goes without saying. You're going to write. Yeah. You're going to write the book you're going to write, and people will either like it or not like it, right?
Yeah.
And how do you feel about, I don't know, like this particular process that you and I are doing right now? I mean, I don't know. You know, I guess asking you to explain. I'm sure interviewers want you to explain certain things, and that's probably difficult. That maybe you don't want to explain any more than Bob Dylan wants to explain his song or whatever.
Well, a lot of the explaining is retroactive. Like, a lot of what I've come up with to say in these interviews is looking back on the book now, but is definitely not at all what I was thinking while I was writing about it. I think there's a lot more intentionality assumed than is actually there. I think that when you're writing, you don't really know what you're doing or what the characters don't feel like they represent anything. The characters feel like real people who are unpredictable and complicated and contradictory. But, you know, when you have, like, I find that in these interviews, I have to look at the book as a reader, which mm-hmm. was a new experience, and to, you know, break it down and discuss it as a reader and as, like, a set object, not as, like, a chunk of a universe that I had control over.
Well, I think it would be really fun for you to come back to my show and talk to me in a year after everyone who's going to read the book, you know, immediately has read it, so that we could have a spoiler-free conversation about it, you know, where we can just, really talk about the plot and so forth. But when you're writing your book, did you already, or any story or anything that you've written, because I know you've written quite a bit, even though this is your first novel, do you know everything that's going to happen? I mean, did you think, I'm going to have this novel and here's how it's going to go? Or do your characters do things that surprise you while you're writing?
So I work in poetry, nonfiction, and fiction. Mm-hmm. And in poetry and nonfiction, I always know exactly what I'm doing. Like, I know what I'm setting out to do. I know the general shape of it. I know, you know, like, it's all mapped out. Fiction, for me, all fiction, whether short fiction or novels, is still a very, like, volatile and unpredictable process for me. I usually go in not really knowing what I'm going to do at all. This novel, my original conception for what it would be ended up only being like a small part of the final chapter is what I thought the whole novel was going to be. it's spun out so wildly, and I think I'm bad at giving advice on writing fiction compared to writing poetry and nonfiction, because it still feels so magical and strange to me, and so, like, I feel I'm not in control of the process, honestly.
So do you do a lot of editing, or do you struggle over every sentence so that there's not a lot of post writing edit? You tell me, rather than me.
I do a lot of editing. I mean, the first draft is what feels so uncontrollable and magical, and even, like, you know, rewriting a large chunk, this novel, I think the first draft took about a year and a half, and then I spent another 3.5 years editing it.
Wow. That's a long time. And you're not that old. So you started writing this book when you were 12 years old. No, you're 26, is that right?
Yes. So I was 21 when I started it. And then, yeah.
So, yeah. Now, do you feel that you've mentioned in writing your next novel. So is it going to take you that long to write your next one, or do you feel now, oh, now I know what I'm doing, and I can write a novel, and it won't take me 5 years or 10 years?
I can't tell. This novel was not the first novel-length manuscript I've ever written, I would say actually trying to write a novel after that one is the hardest and the slowest of any time of any project I've worked on, just because the expectations are different and the world is different, and it's very, when you're writing a first novel, you're writing into the void with very little expectation. A second novel, there are people, I'm under contract and I have an agent, and there are people waiting to see it, which can be a little paralyzing. And as we talked about before, now I know what the critical voice sounds like, and what readers' voices sound like, and I have to use a lot of energy to get it all out of my head so I can keep going.
Can't you pull that one of those novel length manuscripts that's in the drawer that people haven't seen? You can give them that one. Here's novel number two. No, you can't.
No, I'm very confident that the book that's out now is the only one that deserves to be out of any of them that I've written.
Yeah. And so do you, Kim Fu, do you see yourself having a ton of stories rattling around in your head that you can't wait to tell, or are you looking around for your story?
I have a lot of stories rattling around in my head. My philosophy on it is that an individual has like an almost infinite number of ideas, but most of them are bad, and that you can't tell which ones are good until you write them. But I think that's also that should prevent people from feeling despair. Like if an idea is not working, just let it go. You will have 12 more tomorrow. It's, that you can count on that. Like you can come up with 12 bad ideas right now, right? And one of them might be okay once you committed to paper.
I had one idea one time. Anyway, we're talking with Kim Fu, and her novel is called For Today, I Am a Boy. Tell us about some of the other writing you do. So now that you're working on your second novel, now you're a novelist, will you still be writing nonfiction and articles and all those things you've done?
Yeah, I think it keeps me refreshed and on my toes to work in lots of different genres. And there's, there's things you want to say that can only be said in its particular genre, I think.
So what kinds of things have you written in the past, other than this novel that we can find?
I've written a number of essays for Maisonneuve magazine, and I've done some long-form journalism for a number of outlets. I mean, I only moved to the U.S. a couple years ago, so most of these are in Canadian publications.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a short essay for NPR recently about my love of Batman, actually, for NPR Books. And, on my website there's a full listing. Mostly I've done nonfiction, mostly essays and some long-form literary journalism.
And you love Batman?
What's about Batman? Yeah.
Yeah. So, tell us a little bit about your love of Batman. I happen to love Batman also. So, Batman as a character in the movies, Batman as a comic book character, which?
Batman as a comic book character. Although my definitive Batman, I think, is Batman as Batman the Animated Series.
Uh huh. Oh, I love that. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most magnificently written things that has ever existed. The piece I wrote for NPR actually was about sort of reconciling with like a childish view of Batman as a very particular kind of hero, as like a samurai-like hero, and the kind of hyper-violent vigilante vision of Batman that is aimed more at adults, and you kind of just crossing that divide and realizing that when I talk about Batman, I'm talking about my Batman, as though So just the things that I choose to select as being the character.
Well, I guess that's the nature of a character that's been around as long as he has. It's had so many incarnations and artists and writers.
Yeah, exactly.
And actors playing him and so forth, yeah. I mean, a lot of people from my generation are stuck with the Adam West Batman, which, although that show was, fun, is probably the worst possible Batman of all.
Yeah, exactly. That there's campy versions, and that he used to, you know, that he used to be known for quippy one-liners, and that, you know, the difference between being a detective or and like moving in a world of supervillains and of, you know, say, be like, you know, brutalizing thugs and having to deal with all these like legal, like philosophical legal questions, like that those are really different things that all still fall under the one heading of one character.
I guess one of the things I loved most about that animated series that you mentioned is the kind of antique futurism sensibility of it, that, you know, he had cell phones, but then there were also these blimps and things. I like that.
Yeah.
That was interesting. I think of all the things about comic books, I guess the same people who love books feel the same way about movies made of books. There's never been a great movie. I mean, there's been lots of great movies, but there hasn't been a really great movie based on a great book that's been better than the book. Maybe Gone with the Wind, maybe. But, you know, the same is true with comic books. There hasn't ever been a really great adaptation of a comic book on film, except maybe that animated series that you mentioned.
Yeah, I think the animated series, too, is every storyline was pretty, like, each one could have been a movie, but it was, you know, compressed into a 20-minute children's cartoon. But, like, the storylines were, like, that deep. Yeah, I don't know. I love that show. I also actually recently loved the video games, Arkham Asylum and Arkham City, because they have the same sort of... they have the same take, I think, as the animated series did. They have the same sort of vision for Batman that those did, and some of the same voice actors.
There was a little thing in the New York Times Book Review recently asking the question of whether novelists read more novels or watch more TV. I guess most people watch more TV than they do read novels, but I guess we assume that novelists read more novels than they watch TV. What about you?
I definitely read more novels. I don't think there's anything shameful about TV, though. Especially right now, I feel like TV is in like a particularly good age for, you know, serialized dramas and comedies. But I mean, I read a ton because I think you have to be a writer. I don't know any writer that wouldn't say that. Like that you have to read a lot. You have to like learn by osmosis. And you also, I think, you have to participate in the culture that you want to contribute to. I mean, I think Nicholas Sparks was once asked who his favorite author was, and he said himself. you know, like, those were his favorite books. And I thought, that's not a good sign. Like that.
No, that might say something about his work in general.
Yeah, and about, you know, yeah, I don't feel like you can make art if you're not a consumer of art.
And you know, I agree with what you're saying, that you also can't just close yourself off to, you know, well, I don't watch television or whatever, because then you're going to miss a whole lot of aspects of popular culture that your work is set in.
Yeah, I think you will be outside the moment that you're trying to live in and write about.
Who do you read? What are some of the, I don't know, what are the important books for you?
Well, recently I went on a Margaret Atwood binge because I hadn't she hadn't clicked with me growing up, even though she was on lots of you know, syllabi. Like I was always made to read her growing up, and it just didn't work.
Yeah.
And then for some reason something clicked, and then I just fell into her voice, and I couldn't let it go. And I read, you know, 9 of her novels in a row because every time I finished one, I felt like bereft if I didn't have the next one in hand. Kind of when David Rakoff passed away, I read the unfortunately little that there was of all of his work. His novel in verse was just incredible, and his essay collections were incredible too. And I think my writing can come across as very dark, and so whenever someone sees like an edge of dark humor or comedy in it of any kind, I feel really relieved, because I think, you know, I think that there are truths in life you can't get at without a comic edge or like a certain degree of absurdity. And I think that's something that David Rakoff does amazingly. Like, he's the master of that.
Well, I've read everything, every novel by Kim Fu so far, but I hope to get my hands on more in the very near future. This new book, and you should all go get it. Trust me, people. It's called For Today I Am a Boy, and the novelist is my guest, Kim Fu. Thank you so much for spending some time talking to me about all the things I felt like talking about.
Thanks for having me. This was a really great conversation.
That closes the book on this week's edition of From the Bookshelf. I hope you had a good time and that you'll come back and see us again next week. In the meantime, you can check out our podcast page at fromthebookshelf.com, and you can subscribe to the podcast at iTunes, and you can like us on Facebook. I want to thank my guest, novelist Kim Fu. Her book is called For Today, I Am a Boy. Thanks also to my producer, Francis Venegas. I'm Gary Shapiro. See you next time.